Hey, hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 709. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, hey, you know, there's always something's going on if we decide to break out of the usual routine and record here on a Sunday. We had AEW Full Gear, one of their four pay-per-views annually, so we figured it was worth an extra show. I will admit, I did not watch the buy-in show.
So, I did not either. Wait, did I? You know what? Actually, I did. It totally escaped my memory.
And I honestly had the worst experience. Bleacher Report, for whatever reason, did not want to run properly. So I actually gave up. I should have gone immediately to the computer. That was an error in judgment. But for whatever reason, not working on our Fire Stick at all. Which is kind of surprising. I do not really have any other problems with any other apps. So I just want to say a nice hearty fuck you to Bleacher Report's app. It's a pile of hot garbage. Makes Peacock seem great. So with that out of the way, starting off the show, MJF versus Darby Allin. You had some pretty strong opinions on ye olde Twitter. Do you care to discuss those about this opening match for Full Gear?
It just went too damn long. It was just so long. They had some good ideas. The finish was great, but it just went too long. Could have easily shaved 10 minutes off this thing, and we're all better for it.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair enough. I had to check what the report's time is that I'm reading here, and they're saying 22 minutes, which seems pretty reasonable to me. You know, it definitely was on the long side for an opener. I did think it was really strange. Like, this is not something that AEW does very much. Like, they definitely follow that, you know, New Japan build up the card, start with, like you said, shorter matches, and they kind of get lengthened as you move along the card. And that was definitely not the case yesterday. It was very strange. It was very against their booking ethos, honestly. Like, that was the biggest thing that surprised me about the situation.
Yeah.
So it was... I mean, I did enjoy the match. It probably did overstay its welcome a little bit. But it was, to me, I think one of the reasons it overstayed its welcome is because MJF and Darby Allin are two of their biggest stars. But the problem was, I just kind of felt like this feud was had a little bit of a short ramp to get to this pay-per-view. And I'm not sure I ever completely bought into the feud. Because,
no.
You know, MJF was monkeying around with Chris Jericho and whatnot for so long. Like, they just didn't have a lot to invest in this. And I feel like just because of both of their statuses as being kind of like more the AEW homegrown kind of stars, that they get a little more leeway than some people do. Thoughts on that that opinion?
Yeah, that's a pretty good opinion there. I got no complaints against it.
Yeah. So I think that's why that match kind of went long. But like I said, it was pretty strange. It definitely is not in their wheelhouse to do something of that nature. But you know, it did. Like you said, like it did help when the finish ends up paying off. It always helps remedy some problems maybe during the match. when that ending stinks, things get a little ugly because it's your last impression. We had that match was first. Up next, FTR versus the Lucha Brothers. We get some crazy tag team shenanigans to start what could be a night of crazy tag team shenanigans.
Yeah. This match was the complete opposite of the first. Good action throughout, and then a shitty finish.
Because of the way the Bleacher Report thing was running, when I did go back to watch it today, they had this, the FTR, they just continually loop it. You can't just start it fresh on your own. So you just go to their stream and it's just playing all the time in a loop. So I kind of caught this in very choppy action last night. And then when I joined the stream today, this match was playing again. So I feel like I've watched this finish 3 times now, and I'm still confused by the finish, and that's not a good thing.
No, I don't understand what the mask was. Why that's supposed to give FTR supposedly an advantage, and then they just take the mask off and Lucha Brothers win right away. Hit their double team finish and win right away.
It was really strange. So that like you said, like that. It's funny how a good match can be ruined by a bad finish. I watched it 3 times, just confused every single time. not good, man. Not good at all. And I do. As much as I complain about it, the Lucha Brothers matches being 4-way matches for the most part, they do end up putting on an enjoyable product. And this was no different. You know, just...
Yeah, that was good.
So, thumbs mostly up for that one, except for the ending. So, up next, Miro taking on Bryan Danielson. You know, definitely two former WWE stars. Just because if this were Jon Moxley versus Bryan Danielson, I guess I still would have thought that Bryan Danielson was winning. But when Miro ends up filling in this spot, I definitely did not think that he was going to be winning this. This wasn't for a win in the tournament. Wasn't it just a semifinal win?
Wait, what match?
The Bryan Danielson versus Miro match.
That was the final.
The announcers poorly worded it then when they were talking about that. I really expected Bryan Danielson to win, and he did end up doing so. Did you expect him to win, or did you expect Miro to have a chance in this one?
I expected Danielson to win. It felt like it was the... It's not quite time for him to lose yet, and it gave some doubt to the main event, because with Brian, the huge babyface, winning, it gives at least some possibility that Kenny Omega could have possibly walked out with him at the end, so it definitely... Yeah. No, it was the right call.
Yeah. That was the only thing I was thinking to myself. I'm like, I guess I was still convinced that Paige was going to win the main event, not to jump ahead. But I'm like, oh, with Bryan Danielson winning, this sets up an interesting dynamic. As we move along, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see Bryan Danielson put over one Adam Page here in the near future. I really this was another banger of a match. I really enjoyed this match. What did you think of the match quality itself?
It was a very enjoyable match, yeah. They had good chemistry. I don't think they wrestled each other much in WWE, but what they put forth during this match was very strong.
Yeah. Like, I really... Danielson is really taken to the mat, and he's really... that man has wrestled a tremendous amount of matches in his short time in AEW. He certainly seems to be trying to make up for some lost time recently.
Yeah, no, he's definitely the man loves to wrestle, and he would do it anywhere, possibly even for free. But he doesn't have to, so he...
No, no.
He wrestles on every AEW show he can.
Yeah, luckily he has plenty of people wanting to pay him large sums of money to do the thing that he loves to do. Yeah, good on him. I really like Miro. It's pretty weird, honestly, to have... I don't recall any... heel having this much of the literal Achilles heel for Miro in this case. You know, like, I don't remember Andre the Giant having one thing that you could do to really take him out. This whole DDT thing really discombobulates this guy. Is an interesting story to have out there, honestly, and to have it continually pay off. You know, because I feel like he lost to a DDT, or at least a DDT helped lead to one of his other losses. I feel like.
It was a DDT that spelled the end for Miro in the match with Sammy Guevara. Yeah.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. So, and I feel like they had played up... I don't think they played it up for... Did they play it up in the second match with Fuego del Sol, maybe, even? Because I feel like it's been... that this thing's kind of been a long-running thing, and I guess that's kind of... Yeah, it just strikes me as interesting. It's not a storytelling... mechanism that I feel like you see that much in wrestling in general.
Right.
But I kind of like it. It gives him some type of an out, or a weakness if they want to put someone else over. Up next, we get back to some tag team craziness. This time it's a six-person tag match. We got the Super Click, the Young Bucks and Adam Cole taking on Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Christian Falls Count Anywhere match. Yeah, this one was all over the place.
Yeah, definitely, it definitely was, and literally and figuratively. It destroyed at times, but, you know, the big moments really did really work. Nah, if this was the only match of this sort on this show, and it at least had the benefit of being the first one, it, you know, so, you know, this worked for what they were looking for. Another big spotlight moment for Jungle Boy, and you can tell they're ready to move on from Luchasaurus. Did you even see, like, their entrance? Like, the camera is just on Jungle Boy the whole time. Luchasaurus just walks ahead. The camera just stays on Jungle Boy. It's just like, I think that AEW is just about over this team right now. Not sure exactly where you go with, would go with Jungle Boy as a single, since, you know, All the champions are babyfaces at this point now.
Oh.
Jumpy had a little... So, I don't know where you go with it, but they definitely are... They're definitely in the Jungle Boy business and are essentially just playing out a... Seem to be playing out a contract with one Luchasaurus.
Whatever it is, like, I don't feel like the injury that slowed him, that slowed Luchasaurus down, has been completely ever revealed, but this was just another one of those matches that it really stood out that you can tell something's wrong.
No, he's just moving slowly. And it affects the match, especially when everyone else is going 100 miles an hour.
Everyone else is very fast in that match. Like, Christian has always been a fast-paced wrestler. Even in his old age here, I still feel like he kind of keeps things moving more times than not. It's a lot of high-tempo stuff, and Luchasaurus definitely stood out for not being high tempo. And it really wasn't... He's just not adding to matches to me like he used to. Like, he was really pretty genuinely amazing, but I feel like it's an alleged knee injury has really changed it. Like, when you have a guy that size not doing... all these kind of crazy things, and that's what his gimmick was. You've really got to rebrand the guy as a ground guy or something like that. It does not seem like they've tried to do that with him so far. He kind of needs to change his look. Wrestling look. If he wants to do something else moving forward, I feel like, because I'm with you. They definitely seem out of the Luchasaurus business, and they are more than high on Jungle Boy business.
Yeah.
And good luck for Christian, who just gets to, fill in and have some kind of big name matches. Probably along the way, but never, I don't know if he ever gets a championship run in AEW. That'll be kind of interesting if he does, but...
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't really see that happening. Strangest...
Unless he gets himself a regular partner. Unless he gets himself a regular partner, maybe.
What could be the strangest match of the night was up next. Cody Rhodes and Pac taking on Andrade El Idolo and Malakai Black.
What even is this match? Why are any of these people teaming? Why would any of these people be in the same room together? Why not be in the same room together? I don't get it. I haven't gotten it this whole time. It is that whole thing about needing to force Cody on these damn shows. Yeah, this match could have been cut. And once again, it's a shorter, better show. That didn't have its moments, but overall, not a fan. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah. I like all the performers for the most part involved as far as wrestling skill goes. And they didn't outright have blow-ups at each other, but they still had enough hostility that it did kind of mess with the tempo of the match. Like, it seemed like whenever one team or the other got on track as far as working together went, they ended up mucking it up somehow, and it just monkeyed with how the match flowed, and it just, did not make it work very well. And I am even kind of having a hard time remembering what the match was or what the finish was. Oh, that's right. Pac did go over pretty strong in this one, I guess. I can't remember the last time I saw the Black Arrow finishing a match, honestly. Maybe it's just because Pac hasn't consistently been in AEW.
Yeah, that's probably got something to do with it,
But yeah, that was kind of interesting with all the names involved in that one. I guess I wouldn't have picked Pac to be the one getting the pinfall with those four names. Andrade, Malakai, Cody, all of them to me would have been expected. That was kind of interesting to have Pac win that one to me. Up next on the list, Ty Conti taking on Britt Baker. Ty Conti seeming to get a similar rap as one Adam Page, being said that she cannot get the job done when it matters the most. I guess I did not expect her to end up taking the championship this go-round, despite the storyline being so similar to Adam Page's. And she did not. Britt Baker retains. There were some, maybe some nefarious means to help out Britt Baker.
Nothing, the usual type of finish for a Britt Baker match. I thought this match was very disappointing. I felt like they were moving through quicksand at various points, just not really clicking at all. Ty Conti has improved a lot, and she's maybe one of the best squash matchups of the business, actually, when she just takes one of these local enhancement girls and just throws them around, but in a more 50-50 type of match, it just really didn't click for me. And Britt Baker has built a reputation essentially on one match, and it's starting to get exposed a little bit, I think.
I guess it's kind of one of those things where I don't think she's bad, but also don't think she necessarily cut it against the four horsewomen. I guess maybe to just, make a comparison, because I don't want to say that Thunder Rosa carried her necessarily, because I think that she held up her end of the bargain. And even this match, I did enjoy it, but it also didn't blow me out of the water.
No.
Conti's gotten better. maybe still not great, and Britt Baker, you know, yeah, not maybe not good enough to really kick this match into the next gear. I do think is another one that I think this one had a little bit of a short run up too, because she wasn't Britt Baker kind of feuding with Anna Jay right before this.
Yeah, that's the obvious transition.
Yeah. I guess
interesting that Anna Jay wasn't involved in this match at all, considering the fact that Baker has two people in her corner. You think she'd want to help out her friend? I don't know if they're going somewhere with that, because it has felt like, you know, when Anna Jay was getting beaten down, Tay Conti, you know, kind of took her sweet time to get there.
Oh.
Maybe we're in a direction of a breakup, but maybe not. It was just it was weird that, you know, Anna Jay shows up at the end of the show, but, you know, it isn't there for best friend when it's 3-on-1.
Hey, yeah, I did kind of get a chuckle out of that, because I'm like, oh, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, Anna Jay is going to come out and make a difference. And then it never materialized. And I'm like, well, maybe she's just not there tonight. And then she pops up at the end of the show with the rest of the Dark Order. And I'm like, oh no, she was there. I was like, okay, interesting call. Because what, wasn't it... I ended up catching up because Full Gear didn't work properly. I actually went back and power watched Rampage and Dynamite last night. So I've actually jammed in all of AEW in a 24-hour time period.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know... I guess the point being that Tay Conti, at least on one of those two shows, because they're all kind of running together at this point, made that save for Anna Jay. So it's really strange that at most, from Wednesday to Saturday, something happened that Anna Jay decided not to help her friend out. It's a little bit of a strange one. But, yeah, so, women's championship match, out of the way. Up next, CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston. This one, hey, did not have much of a run-up, but it certainly does help to have, 15 years worth of, storylines to play off of to heat up a feud in a hurry.
Yeah, pretty much have arguably the two best promos in AEW, you know, going back and forth. So, you know, that helped with, you know, whenever decision was made to go with this match, if it wasn't the original plan. But it ended up a good plan. I you know, just was maybe my favorite match of the night. So, once again, they had a really physical, you know, tight match. You know, all the way through. CM Punk gets the Duke. Kingston would not shake his hand at the end. I hope we see more from these two, because I think there's definitely more to explore with these two.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at the time of this match, and it's saying 11 minutes. And I just loved the way this match played out. Like, there was all this heavy duty offense to start the match, and then you could tell that they acted spent for like the last 2 to 3 minutes of the match. Like, that they had both really been that pissed off at each other that they, you know, they had kind of done their adrenaline dump to start the match. And then just kind of had to trudge their way through the last couple of matches to pinfall. And, yeah, right guy ends up winning, in my opinion. Like, it's definitely, you know, CM Punk's another one where it's just not the right time to have him lose yet, in my opinion. And, yeah, Eddie Kingston just continues to excel in his role. You know, I guess there's no way to say it. Like, that guy has come in on that tryout contract and just continued to kill it. And he's continuing to kill it, so I'm with you. I would be completely okay with more of Eddie Kingston versus CM Punk moving forward after this one. Because, like you said, without the handshake at the end, they do have some storyline that they can continue to tell. After that, Dan Lambert, Andre Orlovsky, Junior Dos Santos, Ethan Page, and Scorpio Sky versus the Inner Circle. 10-man tag match. Can we say this show was uneven?
Yes, it was. It was very uneven. Things were on this show that didn't need to be. Things went longer than they needed to be. This is definitely file under. This did not need to be on this show. This is unquestionably the worst match of the night. Maybe a couple of things Junior Dos Santos did were impressive, but I also didn't really care either. I guess I just that sums it up. I don't care. I don't care about any of these people. I wish I cared more about say maybe Santana or Ortiz, but no. This is, they decided to roll them back into the Inner Circle again after it looked like they were, gonna distance themselves and at least a non-violent split. Nope, we gotta put them all right back. I mean, Guevara is a singles champion, but he's in this clusterfuck. Hager still has a job for some reason. Jericho, as I mentioned before, Jericho really could have used to take a few months off and been better for it.
Well, the wife did tell me today that Fozzy has a tour upcoming.
Oh, he's been in it.
He's still been in it? Well, she got an ad.
Still been in it, and? Well, I guess they're going back out, but no, he finally was able to get back on the road and tour in September, because I actually have gone for free, but chose not to. It's when they came here, so, and he's been making every Dynamite and Rampage, too.
Oof, man. Yeah, I am definitely 100% ready for a Chris Jericho break, and I've got to admit, it does finally seem like Judas is maybe starting to wear on some people.
Yeah, it the whole package really is.
So yeah, I don't think it's just completely from an us perspective. I think it's a lot of people are starting to notice that. I will say not everyone, I do feel like sentiment's turning that way. So yeah, this match just was not great. I was gonna mention Dos Santos also. I feel like, didn't you mention that he's the one that seems to have been training as a professional wrestler here recently?
I don't remember if I said that, but it's obvious he has.
Oh.
Arlovsky seemed like he was definitely a fish out of water during this whole thing. Was he the one who did the horrible elbow, or is that like one of the other two guys who hang around with him? One of them is actually married to Paige VanZant, right?
Yes, I think it was Orlovsky.
Yeah. Orlovsky was, they needed an extra MMA fighter to be in this. He got the call up because obviously Masvidal, who had been featured, you know, couldn't. And Orlovsky is something of a name, but at the same time, it didn't feel like he really got or chose to do much practice, and he was a fish out of water here.
Yeah, and that's why I did kind of laugh to start with. That I'm like, wasn't it supposed to be some type of a Minnesota street fight? And I was just like, oh my god, this is a 10-man street fight, and they're hiding this match in a regular tag team style match. You know, at least the first like 5 minutes or something like that, they didn't do anything as far as like actual kind of street fight fare. And that told you volumes about what was happening.
Yeah. No, that whole thing was weird, and then the match just breaks down. You know, they got cute with all these Minneapolis-based weapons and the things that were invented in Minneapolis. Did you know the toaster oven was invented in Minneapolis? I did not, so I did learn something.
Yeah, that one was the one that stood out to me, was the toaster oven. They might have mentioned some other things. I'm like... I was like, are you sure that hockey sticks were invented there?
I don't believe that can't, but I would assume somewhere in Canada.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I'm not completely sure about that, but that's fine. I guess because Louisville, where I like Louisville sticks, and obviously they're from not Minnesota. Was who I used to get my my lumber through when it was actually lumber. But anywho, it was not necessary to add that extra element to the Minnesota street fight. I guess it's a nice something to try and spruce up the insert city here street fight.
Yeah,
but I don't care either.
That varied the match from the Falls Count Anywhere match, but the fact that the Falls Count Anywhere match came first, and it was obviously better. You know, there is no reason to do two, tag team clusterfucks on one show like this.
Yeah, and that was the other reason why it hurt. It just there were a lot of, when your main tag team. As enjoyable as FTR versus the Lucha Brothers was, like, when that starts one of, like, four crazy tag team matches, the fourth one's gonna suffer just because it's the fourth one. Considering that we've had a roller coaster, I would definitely say that we ended on an up note. We get Kenny Omega versus Hangman Adam Page for the AEW Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, this was really, really good. I the presentation of it, Hangman entrance, the weird match in that. It never did feel like Kenny Omega got a sustained advantage throughout the match, like, as, typical match psychology, especially for a main event psychology, would go. Oh. It felt like they were telling the story that Hangman was answering, had the answer for everything Kenny Omega was doing. That he had five counters for everything. And I think that was a really good story to tell. I mean, after everything they've put Hangman to for the last 2 years, for him to show up this prepared, this ready, this, his completely mentally focused, sober, I guess, and just, at his absolute best to win the Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, it was a pretty dominating performance, all things considered. It was a lengthy match, 25-35 is the time that I'm looking at for it. To go 25 minutes and to not really have, like, I don't really remember that one moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Adam Page is going to lose this.
No. No, not really at all. They really stuck the landing here. No, this couldn't have really gone any better.
And then really, just to put the... It was nice earlier in the night that Adam Page went to the Young Bucks and apologized to them for being an asshole. And they come out towards the end of the match and okay, Adam Page putting away Kenny Omega and do not interfere on Omega's behalf. If nothing else. You know, that kind of helped tie some storyline together too. I thought they really did a great job of like all the story within this, within these four guys, really got resolved on this night. Like it was, really well done.
Yeah. I loved it. Fantastic. So, yeah, they did it.
Yeah, we didn't have to wait until like the third time for like we did with Roman Reigns for them to get it fucking right. They just did it the right time the first time. Oh, crazy how that happens. So yeah, it's going to be kind of interesting moving forward. Like you said, there are definitely a lot of babyface challengers that Adam Page can look forward to here in the very near future, and both of them with even to me WWE Hall of Fame credibility. One of CM Punk might not want to be in there, but I wouldn't imagine Daniel Bryan turning down the honor. So, but yeah, those are two of the baby faces waiting in the wings for Adam Page. It'll be kind of interesting to see what happens with him moving forward. Because I would imagine that Kenny Omega's probably going to take a step back for a little bit.
The match went, you know, Kenny never hit the one winged angel. Page did, which was a cute little serve, but
oh.
Omega never hit his big finish that no one's kicked out of. Can go. I think we'll see an Omega Page rematch down the line.
Okay.
They got Adam Cole's right there. You can certainly run any number of guys in. It's a good roster for that.
Yeah, they have definitely gotten to fill out that level of their roster with some of these WWE defections and just general additions here. However you want to, you know, because yeah, some of them are kind of all different ways, both releases and just letting contracts run out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess overall, I guess are we gonna stick with a roller coaster edition of a pay per view? Like we kind of started that trend with the bad match before this one. This one definitely finished on a good note.
Yeah, roller
great
coaster. Note. It was disjointed in places. Definitely not as strong of a show as All Out, for sure. But the big moments really, really did hit. You know, they gave everyone the big moment that they've been building to for years. You know, CM Punk and Kenny Kingston really showed out. Danielson and Miro was really good. Yeah, there's certainly enough good on the show to hardly recommend it.
The roller coaster had more peaks than valleys.
Yeah.
I will keep the analogy going in that department. So, yeah. And so for that, yeah, I guess two thumbs up or whatever, whatever we want to call it. Six count for King Kong Bundy, even though I know it's a five count. Anything else to talk about to wrap this one up before getting on out of here?
I think we can head out of here.
Okie doke. Well, Bell Time Beer, I have spent the weekend trying to clear out some of the summer beers in my beer closet here. This one happens to be Sideswipe Brewing Sensitive Content, which is a tropical hazy IPA, 7.2% alcohol, passion fruit, orange, guava, and it's made from a wheat base. I'll tell you what, it's pretty daggone tasty. The wheatiness gives it a little extra refreshing quality that is not always necessarily part of a hazy IPA. So I do like that. I definitely taste the orange in this one. I'm not so sure about the guava, but those are some complimentary flavors, and it's a very tasty beer. Sideswipe Brewing is definitely one of my favorites here in Columbus. So if you happen to visit, seek out their beer, because I'm not sure that it is widely available. So that is the Bell Time Beer of the show. I am at DeFrango11. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of downloadable places, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.